What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz here. Drantz covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Big Wednesday show, as always, here on Canucks Talk. We will do the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal in a few minutes. Jason Bukala joins us at 1 o'clock. And of course, it's a Canucks game day as well. Another big one for the Canucks tonight on Long Island. 4:30 puck drop for that one against Bo Horvat and the Islanders. And it is still a big one, Drantz, but no help whatsoever for the Canucks on the out-of-town scoreboard last night. And their playoff chances, they're not done. They're not cooked. It's not over. But it took another step in that direction, certainly, last night. St. Louis dominates the Habs. They win 6-1. Flames win in overtime against the Kraken 4-3.
Yeah, I think the way to look at it is that the Canucks win on Monday created an opportunity for them to gain ground, right? And then if you watch the games last night, the St. Louis Blues didn't just beat the Habs. They put the boot into the Montreal Canadiens. It was actually wildly impressive. And then, obviously, the Calgary Flames, Nazem Kadri heroically ties the game in the third. Flames take the lead. Flames choke the lead away. Flames win in overtime. That was a fun game. Did you watch that one?
No.
Oh, man. Anyway, a blast. A blast watching hockey last night. But not for the Canucks. The out-of-town scoreboard ultimately did not look the way that the team needed it to. And so, that just nullifies, basically, right, what the Canucks accomplished Monday with their come-from-behind win against the New Jersey Devils. And here's the thing. You know, you basically go, right now, the way that it works with about 11, 10 games remaining, depending on who you are, every time the Canucks, like when the Canucks lose, it halves their chances. When the Canucks win, it adds like 50% to their chances, but that 50% can immediately be undone by the Blues and the Flames sort of continuing to win. When they continue to win too, it runs out the clock. Eventually those boosts to Vancouver's playoff probabilities will incur diminishing returns and get smaller. And that's kind of where we're at, which brings us to tonight. Mission critical game,
Which they all are. You know, barring utter collapses from both Calgary and St. Louis, there's no margin for error, realistically. I mean, there is in the sense that you can probably lose, like, what, two more games? And then you don't need a total miracle to make the playoffs if that's what you're doing. But
you can lose two more games, but even then, you're going to need St. Louis to slow.
Yep.
Right? St. Louis now has 9 games remaining. That's 18 possible points. They can still get to 1-1. Right? They're not going to, but they could still get to 1, although I guess the way they're playing, maybe. But they could still get to 1-1, hypothetically. So, if they go 5-4, well, they're going to be a 93-point team. If they're a 93-point team, you need to get to 94. You need to get 16 points. It's 8 wins.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
It is, but it starts tonight, the road to the playoffs with the Canucks playing. And again, Bo Horvat and the Islanders, 4:30 puck drop. You can hear it here on Sportsnet 650. We'll have lots more on that game. But right now, let's start the crossover with our pals Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. You can catch him on Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. And they join us here, as they do every Wednesday, on the crossover. What's going on, fellas?
Gentlemen,
hey guys.
So, where are you calling it for the Canucks here? Is it over, or are you holding out hope? You believe that they can still make a run here?
Well, for the sake of our show and your show, I hope that they hang in there for a while. But it's not looking good right now. Hey, maybe they have to set their sights on the Minnesota Wild and not the St. Louis Blues the way things are looking for both those teams. But not it doesn't look great right now. And the other thing with St. Louis that not a lot of people are talking about, yes, the Canucks have games in hand on them. Same with the Flames. They've got an easy schedule. relatively speaking, the easiest schedule of the teams involved, and it doesn't look promising for the Vancouver Canucks, Rick.
And the only other thing for the Canucks is every time they play, they're playing another desperate team. It, you know, they're not playing an Islanders team that's 31st in the NHL standings. They're playing an Islanders team right there, 1 point behind Montreal in the East. Their head coach is pissed off. He ripped the league the other night for that disallowed goal. So they're going to be fired up because they gave up a point to Columbus. They're facing an Islanders team that just absolutely is going to be guns a-blazing and looking for desperate points just like the Canucks are. And the other thing that St. Louis is doing right now, guys, is they're forcing Vancouver to go on a heater. They're forcing the Vancouver to win every night. They've won seven straight. They're 13-2-2 since Four Nations. Not only St. Louis, but look at Calgary. They just go into New York, beat the Islanders, the Devils, the Rangers. They come home last night. Kadri, you know, the great overtime winner. They've won four straight. So the teams around Vancouver are winning at such a strong clip. It's forcing the Canucks, just the margin of error for Vancouver right now. And then they got to go into Columbus, and they got to play Columbus, another team that is desperate and trying to stay in the East playoffs. And then they got to wrap this whole thing up against one of the top teams in the NHL on Sunday in Winnipeg. So the schedule is just, every time the Canucks look at their schedule, it's a tough game.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking a lot on our show this week about the impressive resiliency from the Canucks, right? Them being hard to kill, the last-minute comebacks here, the 6-on-5 goals, just finding a way to stay alive. And that's really impressive. It's just the injuries now with Pettersson and Hoglander getting sent home from the road trip. I know they got Demko back. Looks like he's going to start again tonight. It just feels like a little bit too much. Like they're running on fumes at this point when you got Pugh Suter and Teddy Bluger as their top six centers. So, you know, Quinn Hughes, we can all see what he's doing. I don't want to count him out, his ability to drag this team as far as they can go. It just feels a little bit too much to ask even of Quinn Hughes at this point, considering the state of the rest of the lineup.
Well, you mentioned a name there, and that's where their hopes. Obviously, Quinn Hughes is there, and he's a tremendous hockey player. I don't put anything past him, including putting a team on his back and leading them into the playoffs. But you mentioned Thatcher Demko, and it seems pretty obvious right now. That's where the, you know, number one on the list of that's where their hopes lie. If Thatcher Demko can get on some, can stay healthy, number one, and can get on some sort of run and play the way he did in New Jersey, that spectacular overtime save off Paul Carter leading the way. That's where their hopes lie. What are the chances of that happening? Maybe number one, can he stay healthy? And number two, what are the chances of him putting the team on its back, on his shoulders, and leading them into the playoffs? You know, it's a slim hope, but at least there's something there.
Yeah, and positive today is that Demko's playing, right, guys?
I just talked about it.
Yeah, I know, but the fact he said he wasn't 100% against the Devils and then he's going to bounce back tonight, that's a really good sign that durability-wise, look, if Demko can stay healthy the rest of the way and not get injured again, it'd be really good for him. Because there's so many people right now writing that guy off. You see it all the time. He's done. Get rid of him. Trade him. And if he was to get another injury before the end of this regular season, that would be five in probably, it would be less than 12 months. That wouldn't be good. I think it's in his best interest to go the rest of the way without, just to show some sort of durability. You mentioned the, a while back, we talked about him quite a bit. The back spasms in Seattle, now this injury kept him out 6 weeks. Can he stay healthy the rest of the way? I think that's a big question for the Canucks going into these final remaining games as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. The Demko being healthy would be, I mean, we know what this guy can do when he's in the lineup, when he's available.
Yeah.
He's a game changer for this club. If you were to sort of rank the thing you care most about seeing from this team between now and the end of the season, not you cannot count making the playoffs, okay? We're taking results off the board. What you want to see from this team between now and game 82? Aside from Demko staying healthy, because you've already used that one, Rick, gentlemen, what would you pick? What are you most keen to get from the rest of the season?
Tom Wilander.
Yeah.
I like it. Good answer.
Good answer.
Hope for the future. Yeah, and again, that's the two things that sell in the National Hockey League and any pro sport are wins, championships, and secondly, hope. And I'd like to see, you know, him inserted into the lineup. Whether or not that's the right thing to do at this stage of his career, I'm not sure. But just give some people something to hang on to. They've done it before. They've done it with Brock Besser years ago. Same with Quinn Hughes. And that's what I'd love to see, you know, something that tells fans out there that there is hope for the future. You know, and maybe some other young players as well. But it'd be nice to see that.
I want to see, you know, how the center ice position is the rest of the way here. Guys, you know, Pettersson, I don't know if he's going to come back or not. And Suter and Thomas, I think you mentioned $3.5 million this guy could get. I think that number's going up and up and up.
Yep.
In terms of July 1st. I'm starting to hear the number 4 attached to him and maybe beyond. I don't know. Like, his first game as first-line center, he had 23 minutes. He had the most out of anybody else. He had 6 shots on goal. He had a goal. You know, I mean, this guy's his stock is rising. And don't tell me, you know, teams aren't watching him down the stretch to see how he performs with the pressure of being a first-line center. But, and then, you know, because Hedl too, like, guys, I don't know where that concussion sits. We had a reporter, Donnie, on from New York last week who said that he had 4 concussions in New York. And last year he missed 72 games. And stop with the nonsense that the Canucks didn't do their homework on Hedl. Of course they did. They would have checked his medical records and all that stuff. You can't predict Dickinson doing that to Hedl. You can't predict that. I mean, that was, you know, and now Dickinson's out. But you can't predict that that's going to happen to him. But I want to see if he comes back. I want to see how Suter does. They're looking for a second-line center. Will Pettersson ever be a 100-point center again? Like, guys, their future up the middle of the ice is going to be of utmost importance this offseason.
Yeah, and by the way, I Volander's a good shout by you, Donnie, and I would add Lekker Mackey in there as well. He's already here, but to see him seize an opportunity, make the most of it, get more looks on the power play, get more minutes, all of that, it's been fun to watch him, so that would be high on my list. Yeah, Mancini, that's a good one too. Pugh Suter, you talked about him there, Rick. I mean, as you said, the price is going up, but that's also because he's showing how important he can be for a team. So to me, it's not as simple as, well, the price is going up, he's pricing himself out of the Canucks range. It's the price is going up because we're getting a better sense of just how valuable he can be. And I still look at this, and as you make the point about the questions at center, Rick, the questions around Filip Hedl's health, you know, Pettersson, will he be here next year? We don't even know that. And if he is, what version of him do we get? I'm not sure that just because it's going over $4 million, it means, oh, they got to let him walk. I might look at Pugh Suter as more of a priority than Brock Besser at this point, given the Canucks' needs to get re-signed for next year. Do you still see a path for Pugh Suter to remain with the Canucks beyond this season?
Well, I can tell you that after the trade deadline, before the trade deadline, there wasn't a ton of talks with him that week. But I can tell you that the Canucks and there was contact with Pugh Suter's agent after the trade deadline, which was very interesting to me because that would have been the time that Hedl went out with his concussion. So, but they're going to have to go to an uncomfortable number if they want to keep Suter. But you also have Hedl at his number, and he's not at $1 million. So you have to. Their first offer to Lankinen was $3.9 million. Then they went to $4.5 million. So they went to an uncomfortable number. They're going to have to do the same with Suter. They're going to have to go to a very uncomfortable number with him if they want to retain him. But he's in a good boy. He's in a good He's in a good position. His play's been great. And absolutely, teams are watching that guy like a hawk right now. And you got, hey, you know, his agent, you don't think he's doing cartwheels?
I was just going to ask.
Yeah, he is.
He's doing cartwheels,
he's in
no
a good
doubt
position.
About it. No one's ever been doing cartwheels like him.
Well, Jonathan Lekaramaki, you mentioned him.
Yeah.
Jonathan Lekaramaki, what does that mean in relation to Brock Besser?
Yeah.
When you bring up Besser, who's, you know, it's going to be a hefty price tag, you would think, with him, certainly compared to the other people we're talking to. But what do they see in him? Certainly we saw a lot the other day against New Jersey. Is he somebody that can fit in the top six? And you talk about hope for the future, there's that. And Thomas, I don't know how you feel about this, but we all look at Rick Tocchet's interviews before and after games on a consistent basis, every single day. Even today,
yes.
You know, with the one reporter that was there, we got something out of there. But you can tell he, and I don't know how much he's going to have to say about this. I don't even know if he's going to be there next season. It's pretty obvious he really likes Pugh Suter.
Yeah.
Like, he likes him as a hockey player.
Yeah.
You know, his face starts shining when he starts talking about him. He called him an assistant coach the other day. Yeah. He really, really likes him. So I wonder who they prioritize. I think it might surprise some people that it might be, and given the price tags,
yeah,
it might be Suter over Besser.
Yep. I mean, how could you not like Pugh Suter? Look at the list of pending unrestricted free agent centermen. You got Tavares, you got Bennett, and you've got who exactly? You kind of have Pugh Suter.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly. And yeah, when you consider, I mean, what he did the other night, right? Four shots, five on five, five overall. Almost had two goals, but had had a goal and an assist. He didn't just handle tough matchups. He ate Nico Hischier's lunch. And Nico Hischier is going to be a Selke nominee. I mean, that was a wildly impressive performance from a guy who also, if you need it, can complement your top players on the wing on your top line. Or do you need a guy to center your fourth line? Hey, Pugh Suter, really good at that. He can add some supporting offense if you're good enough to play him there. You know, third line energy wing. Sure, he can do that. Top line center, because you've sustained another run of injuries after you had to trade a guy because your core couldn't make it work, couldn't build a durable partnership with one another. Yep, no problem. Pugh Suter's got it. That's coach's dream. And it raises a floor for this team, especially because what he's exceptional at, right? He does two things at a really high rate. He defends, period. He's like a special defensive presence. And gentlemen, yes, he's hitting career highs in goal totals this year. But for a guy who never really plays on the power play, to be a 15-goal-a-year guy, year after year after year, like, he's a top-six rate scorer, five-on-five. He scores goals. Maybe he's not the most dynamic playmaker. Maybe he's not as big, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe his waist size isn't as large as you'd want from your third-line center in an ideal world. But who cares? He's a winning hockey player, period. I think there's a lot of teams that he could help, and I think there's a lot of teams he could help at $4.5 million plus, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah. No, he's already helped Detroit, Chicago, and Vancouver.
Yeah.
There's something there. And, you know, when I talk about Rick Tocchet, when he talks about him, and Alvina said this as well, Pugh Suter's slow. He's not a fast skater by any means. And you can say the same thing about Brock Besser. They talk about it, but when they say it, it's like they admire what he can get done despite his shortcomings when it comes to speed. They really like his brain, and I wouldn't be surprised if they, I don't know if the phrases go out of their way, but I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, made a decent attempt at keeping him. Wouldn't surprise me
at all. And the description Rick, just to jump in on Pugh Suter.
Go ahead.
The description that jumps to mind for me when I see Rick Tocchet speaking about him is low maintenance, right? He's a low maintenance player. Put him wherever, shows up, works, doesn't come in and talk to me a lot. I don't need to put a lot of work in, but he just shows up and applies what we're telling him and does it. And I mean, isn't that what the Canucks need more of? Isn't that what Rick Tocchet wants more of? Low maintenance players.
Well,
because they've had a lot of high maintenance guys this year that have taken up a lot of Rick Tocchet's time.
No babysitting with Suter.
Yes.
Because he's sure done a lot of babysitting with some other guys this year, which is a part of the reason why he says, you know, he's had a tough year this year in Vancouver. There's been a lot of babysitting with some other guys, but not with Pia Suter. I just wanted to say that Pia Suter does want to return to Vancouver. It is a situation where he would like to strike a deal in Vancouver first. But if he hits that July 1st market, guys, he'll do fine.
Sorry, I want to come back to Pugh Suter's skating speed because I uncovered something that's quite comical on NHL Edge data. NHL Edge, do you guys ever use this? This is the skating speed, the shot speed?
No, not at all.
Okay,
I only use it when you use it in a story, then I use it.
Fair enough. Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate that. Anyway, the It tracks two things: your top skating speed and also speed bursts over 20 miles per hour. And to protect players, it sorts by percentile. But if you're in the bottom half of the league, it just says below 50th. It doesn't reveal exactly where it is. So Brock Besser, who's skating, is a constant topic of concern in this market. Talked about at length all the time. Top skating speed this year, 21.76 miles per hour. Pew Suter, 21.07, so significantly slower. Speed bursts over 20 miles per hour, Brock Besser, 37. Okay, league average at his position, 69.7. It's below 50th percentile. Pew Suter, 8. He has only clocked over 20 miles per hour in 8 different speed bursts over the course of the season. League average is 70. And he still gets it done. That's a smart player, man.
But he gets it done.
Yeah.
Gets it done. Gets it done.
He's effective.
Gets it done. And Brock and Suter and Brock both have great hockey sense, and that's what keeps them at the NHL level when you're not a great skater.
So we've been kind of talking around it here a little bit with, you know, how much Rick Tocchet loves Pew Suter, all the babysitting he's had to do and everything, but it's starting to become a more frequent topic of conversation now. What does Rick Tocchet's future hold beyond this season? And I mean, you know, we're getting down to brass tacks here this year. They've only got 11 games left, possibly some playoff games after that, but pretty soon this is going to be a very front burner topic. I know Frank Saravalli on our station has said multiple times there's a lineup of teams that would gladly fire their coach in order to bring Rick Tocchet in. You know, the Philly connection with some of John Tortorella's comments, that's getting some play. What does your guys' gut say about where this is going with Rick Tocchet and the Canucks?
Well, we drew that connection today on our show. Tocchet's conversation with Ian McIntyre and talking about not being a quitter and all that. But then, Rick, help me out here, the phrase that he used regarding the negativity.
A draining year.
A draining year. And then you had Tortorella, and you mentioned it, Jamie, Tortorella's comments from last night, and very, very negative. And boy, that would be a fit. You know, 11 seasons playing for the Flyers, two different stints, always seems to be connected to the Flyers. People remember those days with Mike Keenan going way back very, very fondly. I just don't get guys, and I know back in January, Patrick Helvin made the comment about it being a two-way street when it comes to negotiations, hinting that, you know, Rick Tocchet maybe didn't want to sign an extension at some point. But you win an Adams Award, you've got 1 year left in your contract. Yep. Would you not think that was the time it would get done?
Strike.
But it didn't, and Helvin hints at that maybe it was Rick Tocchet who didn't want to commit himself. So that's just really, really interesting. You know, what exactly happened there? Is he enjoying himself? Yeah. Like, did he even enjoy himself last year? Why wouldn't you re-sign when you're on top of the coaching world like that?
I'll tell you what happened. You had the Miller leave of absence. Then you had the Miller-Pettersson feud. And then so much time was spent on your number one center, who has not been a difference maker in the past 12 months. How much time did he spend on Pettersson, you know, before and after practices, video work, all that stuff? So you're dealing with your number one center. You're dealing with two superstar players not getting along. One of your superstar players takes a leave of absence. You can understand why he's had a draining year. You know, it's been a soap opera all year long. The national media was loving Vancouver when all this stuff was happening. It's a drain. It was a big drain on him this year, and he's telling you that I need time to figure it out after the season. But when this season is over, the Canucks are going to have to do a sell job. I'm sorry. They're going to have to articulate a plan going forward saying, this is how we're going to fix it. This is how we're going to get a second line center. This is how we're going to re-sign our captain. This is how we're going to, you know, this is what we're going to do with Demko to make sure he, you know, becomes that number one goaltender again. There are so many ifs with this hockey club, and he's going to want some answers. And it's up to them when they sit down with him after the season. They better be prepared, because as Cervelli is saying every week, he's saying it for a reason. You know, this guy's going to walk. And I think the Canucks have one hell of a sell job to do after this season with him to bring him back.
Well, here's the X factor, and it's the X factor, I think, when it comes to everything the Canucks are doing right now. What does Quinn Hughes think?
Yeah.
In Ian McIntyre's article, Rick Tocchet mentioned, I'm paraphrasing here, that Rick Tocchet asked Quinn Hughes, how are you doing? And Quinn Hughes responded, oh, no, coach, how are you doing? And I go back to last offseason again, this past offseason, and Quinn Hughes saying that Rick Tocchet is the best coach he's ever played for. So, you know, you talk about the dysfunction within the organization, and we're talking about players here, but what would Quinn Hughes' reaction be if Rick Tocchet left the organization? Like, how would he feel about that? What would it mean, you know, a little over 2 years from now, a little under 2 years from now, when that deal has to get done, hopefully, for Quinn Hughes? Will that piss him off to the point where he doesn't want to come back? He's the best coach. I'm sure he's played for a lot of coaches going back to minor hockey. He said he's the best. I believe
significant.
He's the best coach he's ever played for. What is that going to mean?
It's a bit of a catch-22, though, I think, Donnie, because if you're Tocchet, and Quinn Hughes' future is up in the air. Well, Quinn Hughes, like if you're any coach in the NHL and you're thinking about coaching in Vancouver, Quinn Hughes is the number one reason you want to come here. It's an incredible opportunity to coach a player like that. But if you don't think he's locked in long term, how much do you want to lock in long term? So it's kind of like one of them almost has to blink and lock in first and then hope that's enough to keep the other guy around if they like working together so much. But I don't know if just Quinn Hughes being here is enough for Tocchet if there's uncertainty about his long-term future, Hughes's.
There's a lot of teams that I watch play on a nightly basis, by the way, and Rick knows that I'm always watching.
20 games a night.
There's a lot of teams that I watch play that I think, man, they might have 10 to 15 more points if they had Rick Tocchet. You know, like the Ducks are for sure one of them. The Rangers are for sure one of them. I mean, there's a handful of teams that the Chicago Blackhawks are another one. So, I mean, there's a lot of teams that would benefit from Rick Tocchet's services. I don't know if I'm putting him in my personal top five, but, man, I think there's no question that this team has been exceptionally well-drilled and organized throughout his tenure.
Yeah, I think you look at the Devils game, right, as the most recent best example of that. That team came out, executed, played hard with an undermanned roster.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, even the Rangers game, you know, like as poor as the result was, they were by far the better
team.
Awesome. They were just extremely unlucky.
Although it was against the Rangers.
A goalie apparently wasn't feeling well.
It was against the Rangers, though. I don't know.
That's true.
I watched that first period against the Kings yesterday, and I was just like, my God, this is brutal.
So we're going to let you guys go here, but I mean, Rick, you're not blasting Drance for his Utah take? This is a golden opportunity right here. What? Hold his feet to the fire.
What do you want me to say? Every day I go home, I listen to YouTube, and he's telling us the St. Louis is junk. And this has been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks. Yep. St. Louis is awful. Calgary's awful. Utah's great. Utah got hammered the other night, 5-1, 7-1 in Edmonton. But for some reason,
he thinks
Utah's going to win the Stanley Cup for the next 10 years.
Go look up Austin Watson and Marco Kasper's goal.
Don't throw stats at me. I don't want to hear stats. I don't want to hear stats.
Didn't Donnie just give credit to the Canucks for playing well in a loss against the Rangers?
Right? It was like 5-1, though.
We all know.
It was 7-1.
Does
somebody in Utah have pictures of you?
Hey, listen.
If they do, I don't want to see them.
Yeah, listen.
Like, what is this where your fascination with Utah? Oh,
team is qualitatively on the verge. They're just young. They're making a bunch of dumb mistakes down the stretch. I'm pretty confident that they will be ahead of the other teams in the mix with them next season. They're building something pretty impressive over there.
All right.
Just didn't come together for the
moment.
Let's get off this
subject for a second. I got to say, Thomas, this is your best look.
Wow.
This jacket, hat combination.
I like it.
I want to see that on Friday.
I like
it. It's outstanding.
I love your collar.
Thanks, buddy.
It's a compliment, but also implying that your looks on their show have not been up to par.
You know
what I mean? It's like, where's this? Why are you dressed like this on their show?
I used to always show up to their show wearing like a collar and a knit sweater, you know, when I was first new, trying to make a good impression.
Trying to be professional.
Yeah. And now I show up in sweatpants.
This is good.
Wow.
I want to see this look on the cover of that book you're writing, Hockey 101, okay?
Just need my magnifying glass and a map of the state of Utah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We'll let you fellas go. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Cheers, boys.
That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. They are the hosts of Donnie and Dolly, which you can see Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. They join us every Wednesday for the crossover. That was a very collegial crossover until the end. when I had to bait Dollywall
and
a little
even
bit
then,
there.
And even then. Hey, look, I had it wrong. I definitely did not see St. Louis coming, and I thought that Utah would pull it together. I think the truth is that I was looking at these teams trying to figure out who's going to go on an unholy tear. Because these are how these tight playoff races usually get decided, is one team goes on fuego, right? Yep. And I just thought, based on what we were seeing underlying, based on the speed of the team, based on the potential for guys like Gunther and company to go, like, I wanted Gunther and Cooley stock to go on an unholy tear. Turns out it's Rob Thomas and Dylan Holloway. So that's on me. I placed my bet on the wrong horse while sort of trying to figure it out.
By the way, I just have to say, we now have a large enough sample size of shows with and without Jamie Dodd featuring the crossover. I can assertively say that Jamie is the one sowing the chaos the crossover. Like, without a doubt. Whenever you're not here, it's cordial, like, it's nice, you know, analytical, the guys get along. Jamie's here, chaos.
I'm like Littlefinger in Game of Thrones, like behind the scenes, pulling the strings, making other people mad at each other, and being like, wow, that everyone got really angry there. That was wild.
And then, yeah, chaos is a ladder. Hey, my dear wife, take a closer look at my moon door. Anyway, Jamie.
Imagine if he'd done the chaos as a ladder read like that with the laugh after. And the director was like, okay, cut. Loved that. But can we try it without the laugh at the end there?
And it's like, nope.
Nope. That's how I do it. That's my process.
You're stifling me.
All right. We'll take a break. Lots more to get into here. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Canucks game day today. They take on Bo Horvat and the New York Islanders, a similarly desperate team trying to hang around in the Eastern Conference playoff race. And just to continue on a theme of something we've talked a lot about this week already, our pal Joey Kenward here at Sportsnet 650 shared this on Twitter this morning, courtesy of Sportsnet Stats. The last three games, in all of their last three games, Vancouver has scored a game-tying goal with less than 5 minutes remaining in the third period. That's the first time in club history they've ever done that. Three straight games, under 5 minutes, and you score a tying goal into the third period. And in two of those, it's been in the last minute. I mean, Brock Besser, last 3 seconds. Connor Garland, like 36 seconds left against the Devils. Brock Besser with just under 5 minutes to go against the New York Rangers. Now, the interesting thing is, they only picked up 3 points. So they've done it three times.
They've still managed to lose one of those games in regulation.
Yes. And then lose the Blues one in overtime. And then they get the win against the Devils in the shootout. It's one of those things where, and we were talking about it before the Devils game even, and I was saying, like, hey, you go back to right when Rick Tocchet took over this team, and it was Elias Pettersson and Andrei Kuzmenko pulling it out of the fire in the third period for them on multiple times down the stretch. And you can find all of these different examples. The playoffs last year with Brock Besser. I will admit that sometimes in, you know, the Boudreaux bump season when they were kind of trying to hang around the playoff race, and even that second Rick Tocchet year, and at certain times this year when they've been coming back, that more than being impressed with it, I have been a little frustrated, because there's always the flip side of, well, why are you in this position? Why are you in this position where you need to mount the desperate comeback? Now, the Devils one was different for me. That there was no like side eye, you know, rolling my eyes at the comeback. That was just pure. I was like, guys, that was awesome. Good job. Hats off to you. You were in a really tough spot. You fought hard. You battled hard all night, and you got the goal when you needed it. That was 100% impressive. But it is tough to look at, you know, these performances, and I think especially that Devils game, that effort, that level of push and drive, And it's hard to not think about why they are in this position, why they are in the spot they are in the standings, where they're now, I think it's fair to say, long shots to make the playoffs over the Blues and the Flames. And you can point to the adversity, and you can point to the injuries, and maybe some things out of the team control, out of the team's control, and all of that. But you also have to, if you're being honest, you have to look at it, you know, go back to game one of the season. You know, they're up 4-1 against the Flames.
Yep.
Can't lock it down. Lose in overtime.
Nope.
You know, game before Christmas. You're up 3 goals on the Kraken with 5 minutes to go. Can't lock it down. You lose in overtime. And it's, I'm not just talking about blown leads. There are a lot of games from earlier in the season where if they had had anything close to the effort they brought against the Devils, you're probably walking away with 2 points. Or at least it's a very, very different game than it turned into. And we all remember some of the lopsided scores that they turned in, especially at home in the first part of the season. So it's one of those things where I'm not trying to take credit away from them. It is legitimately impressive that they're doing this, that they're finding a way to stay alive. They're finding a way, you know, to kick out at two, as I said to Batch yesterday. But I also can't look at it without feeling kind of inherently frustrated that they put themselves in this position to need these desperation victories constantly and in three games in a row, at least desperation game time goals to kind of keep their playoff hopes alive.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been a theme all season. The Canucks have been outscored by 7 in situations where they're leading 59 goals for 66 all told over the course of the year. They've actually got the 25th worst goal differential with a lead of any team in the league. So what does that tell you? At one of the lowest rates in the league, do the Canucks extend their lead versus fritter it away, or at least see that it's marginalized somewhat? And I think that's been, like, what's interesting about the three games we've seen the Canucks play is that it hasn't been as if they've been constantly trailing in games. It's not like teams have come out and put the boot into them early and then been holding leads, right? You think about that Blues game. It was like a long time where it was scoreless.
Yep.
I can't remember who scored first, but they sort of trade goals. It's 1-1. Canucks get a lead, quickly allow both the game tying goal and the go ahead goal, and are then scraping by the rest of the way. The Rangers, right, kept retaking the lead, and then the Canucks would eliminate it, despite the Canucks being the far better side, kind of the inverse of what we saw in St. Louis, where St. Louis probably deserved to be up by more than a goal when Besser scored. And then we see that Devils game, you know, sort of similar script. The Devils led in the final stretch of the game, but that came about late. In fact, the Canucks had a 2-1 lead, you know, in that game until New Jersey got 2 in a row. So it's not like these games, for the most part, what we've been seeing is that the Canucks play these tied game states and tend to be the one that breaks as opposed to being the one that takes the lead. And then on those rarer occasions where they do take the lead, they give it back. But on the run, when they give up the lead to their opponent, they tend to be in the fight. They tend to be able to manufacture the goal they need to pull it back even. Last year was such a different story in terms of this team always was building that lead up.
Yes.
Constantly building that lead up. This team doesn't seem to be able to find that pull away gear that they had last year. And I think you are seeing signs of defensive slippage relative to the extraordinarily high level that this team hit down the stretch last season. So I think that's part of the story, but obviously a bigger part of it is that their, you know, shooting fortune hasn't been as good, right? Like this team doesn't have as many guys rolling. It's not just luck. It's like more guys are fighting through injury. More guys are fighting through confidence issues. Mm-hmm. More guys aren't rolling downhill. They probably don't feel, probably do 6-on-5, but otherwise they probably don't feel like they're going to win every game the way they clearly did down the stretch last season. So, you know, it's one of those things where I just think the truth of it is that the Canucks are kind of meh. This is kind of a mid team at 5-on-5 this year, whereas like last season, they were spectacularly fortunate for a stretch and then spectacularly good for a longer stretch down the pointy end of the season. I just don't think this team has the same gear anyway.
Yeah, and it's that the lack of pulling away. Like how many blowout wins have the Canucks had? I know they got the one against the Jets and the Blackhawks recently, but there hasn't been a ton of comfortable victories. And part of that is, and you know, Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texted in, there have been some remarkable last-minute losses and some remarkable last-minute wins this season. The volatility is truly remarkable. he's right, and I do think there's extra volatility to this Canucks team, but it's also just if you're constantly in these tie games late, you're going to have a lot of these volatile finishes. You're going to have a lot of dramatics either way, and that's kind of how this Canucks team is built. They're not as good defensively as they were last year, but they're still pretty good defensively, so it has been harder, especially, you know, I would say after Christmas, when you compare it to the first part of the season, it's been harder for teams to really blow them out, and they don't have that offensive gear to pull away and build a comfortable, you know, 2-3-4 goal lead with any sort of consistency. And that's one of the hallmarks of good teams is being able not just to win, but win comfortably, right? Like, yeah, there is truth to, hey, good teams find ways to win and they sneak out one goal games. They do that too, but really good teams also take care of other teams. They win comfortably at least a certain amount of the time. And so, again, to bring it back to the stat about, you know, these last minute or in the last 5 minute game tying goals, it is awesome. Like, there's no other way to say it. As you said, like, they've got guts, they're hard to kill, whatever you want to say, it's great, but it's also a symptom of lacking that trait of really good teams, which is you're pulling away and you're not in close games that often.
Yeah, it's like killing rats. It's got to be done, but if you're doing it all the time, it's the sign of a larger issue, right? And I think that's where the Canucks are. Now, look, we don't know exactly what their forward lineup's going to look like, but we do know that Pettersson and Hoglander were sent home.
So I think they only have 12 healthy forwards. So, yeah. So I mean, maybe you could juggle the lines, but we know who the 12 guys are going to be.
Or you could go 11-7.
That's true.
My point is, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but we know that this team is going to be shorthanded again against this Islanders team that profiles a little bit similarly. The Islanders don't score a ton.
Mm-hmm.
The Islanders are not good in overtime. The Islanders are, you know, like, this is has all the trappings of one of those, like, games that where you might not see a goal till the 45th minute, right? This might be a white-knuckle affair. And it's one the Canucks need to win, and yet the Islanders, who sold at the deadline, you know, given the diminished state of Vancouver's lineup, right, probably have more juice. I don't know that we've said that about the Islanders in a long time.
No.
But
typically not the team we're pointing at and saying, wow, look at all the juice over there. Got like a whole 2 liter thing of Five Alive over there.
Much more likely to be like, wow, look at all the fish sticks. They have lots of fish sticks. You know, they still have Palmieri. They still have Bo Horvat, right? Like, they're still going to have an edge down the middle with Pajot, Cizikas, and Bo Horvat. Yeah, I mean, this is just one that it'd be really nice for this team to have a drama-free win.
That'd be great.
It'd be great.
I bet it would be, like, I do wonder about the dynamics from the team perspective, because I'm sure you've been in, well, I know you've been in situations professionally where it is like high stress and okay, we've got these tight deadlines and everything. And there's a level where the adrenaline takes over and like the adrenaline is coursing through you and that pushes you to get everything done and meet the moment. So that could be a factor here. They're like, oh my gosh, like we're flying high because we keep tying these games and this is incredible. But you got to think just like a break to have a more relaxing game. You know what I mean? Would probably do wonders for them. So they're not constantly in the highest stress situations imaginable. Like, man, if they could get up 4-0 and just like, hey, we're going to coast here.
Yeah.
We're going to coast to victory. I bet that would feel really nice for them.
I would say more than anything, I think if you're trying to squint and find reasons to believe as a Canucks fan at this point in the season. And of course, most Canucks fans, I think, are in that boat, especially because
I don't know if that's true, actually, to be honest. Well, I think a lot of people are in the it's over.
I honestly get the sense that, like, there's not even anger about this team. Do you notice that?
No.
Not like in past years where people, like, the draftists start.
Well, that's the thing. I think because it's the fall off is happening late enough in the year that you're not looking at this and saying, like, oh, let's boost our draft odds.
No,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And in past years where they've been, you know, maybe on the bubble, but not really of the playoffs, it's felt more high stakes in a way to me because it felt like missing could be a catalyst for some sort of significant change in direction.
Right.
But I think the sense is accurately here, make or miss, the plan is the same. So
correct.
It's not as if it's, oh, hey, well, if they lose, maybe they'll finally, you know, do what I've always wanted them to do. It's like, no, if they get in or they don't, they're going to do the same thing, probably.
They're kind of locked in.
So it feels less high stakes, to be honest, whether or not they make the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't always have the best instinct for, like, licking my finger, putting it in the air, and sort of figuring out which way the winds are blowing. But it just feels to me like there's, like, a, I don't want to say disengagement, but it just feels to me like there's a, level of acceptance that I think is in contrast to how seasons have ended, you know, certainly through this show's lifetime. That's the sense that I have anyway. And, you know, when I think about sort of what then the rest of the season means, right? You know, I think Donnie honestly hit it on the head during the crossover when he mentioned Verlander.
Yeah.
It's like hope, right? Hope. I think the Demko being available throughout the stretch run would be a huge boost in terms of what that means for this team, what they can rely on next year, a core piece that, you know, I think you can count on to be a core piece again next season at least, especially if he's able to finally sort of put together a stretch of games where he looks healthy and stops pucks at the rate that he's capable of. You know, and then there's sort of at least standing up in the race. Like, this team has a lot of home games left, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, at least making it interesting. I think all of that matters. But more than anything, I think if you're looking for hope from the narrow perspective of can this team make it or not, against the Rangers and the Devils, one thing they did really well was actually generate scoring chances. And that's in contrast with a lot of what we've seen over the course of the year. Smoke and mirrors did a little bit against the Devils, I think, with the D being super active. You know, it worked. It worked. Like, bottom line, it worked. Will it always work? You know, I don't know that you want Marcus Pettersson and Derek Forbert to be your primary playmakers, but it worked. And if this team can actually string together 10, 11 games where they're meaningfully testing opposition goaltenders, you know, that's not something we've seen all season. It's been this team's biggest flaw all season. And given where their penalty kill has trended, given the overall baseline that their sort of combination of defense and sturdy goaltending gives this group, if you can generate chances, maybe you can get hot. You still need luck. You still need a lot of things to go your way. This team's still shorthanded. And we know that you might be able to cobble together, like, replacing Pettersson for a week. But if it becomes 2 weeks, that becomes usually a problem. So I don't necessarily take it to the bank, but I guess one thing about how this team's game is trending, they've actually generated chances in back-to-back games. I don't know how many times I've had the occasion to say that over the course of this season, and at least that gives them a puncher's chance, I suppose, going into tonight's game.
Jampro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, Jampro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit jampro.ca. We'll take a break. Jason Bukala joins us next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Rare vocal cut here.
Yeah, is this rights-free Grimes?
So what I've discovered is that SoundCloud also features a bunch of unlicensed music.
Ah.
And I can just go and find house DJs on SoundCloud.
I'll be honest with you.
Great.
I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of into this.
Yeah. It's summer vibes.
Yeah. No. Well, I don't know about summer vibes. It's a little lo-fi for that. Maybe summer evening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Joining us momentarily here. I would describe my reaction to this as totally ambivalent, neither positive or negative.
No, it seems pretty negative, man.
No.
Seems
no, I don't care.
Pretty hostile.
Sure.
Now he's trying to stir the pot. All right. It is now time to go to the Power West hotline to speak to our next guest, Power West, your power generation specialist for 50 years. And joining us on the Power West hotline, our pal from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He is Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? How are you today?
We're doing very well. It's kind of a weird part of this Canucks season because they are still alive, but the injuries are piling up, and it's tough to see the path really for them making the playoffs. But, you know, it's another big game against the Islanders tonight. I mean, what did you think of their performance against the Devils on Monday, especially considering, you know, what they were starting down the middle in that game and finding a way to come away with the 2 points?
gutsy performance. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. For the rest of it, I was going through their games that they have left here. Obviously, that was big. It's nice. Lekaramäki with the little stick twirl. I love it, the little guy. I mean, these skilled youngsters, it's great. It's fun. I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm trying to piece this together in relation to the roster and the injuries. And, you know, it's, the St. Louis Blues have been a wagon for a long time now. And they're just, even with Parayko out there, and they're going to be tough to catch. But, the Islanders, CBJ, Anaheim, San Jose, Seattle, and Mini, those are all must-win games here down the stretch for the Canucks, obviously. And then you have to somehow figure out how you're going to split the other parts of your schedule with Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado, and Vegas twice. Now, one of those Vegas games is the last game of the year, and depending on what it means to Vegas, their roster could look a lot different compared to what it means for Vancouver if it comes down to that night. But heavy lifting, guys. They're in a tough spot.
Books, I want to get your reaction to the following phrase. Pugh Suter, yeah. $4 million player.
Wow. Okay. So can I back it up with my own story?
Because
you and I have had cocktails before, and generally speaking, we're relatively aligned. We'll argue about stuff, but we're relatively aligned with a different reality compared to what people who just are fans of the game are listening to. So I'm in Toronto just bear with me for a sec. I'm on Feuda's show last week, and I was posed a question about Matthew Knies. And, you know, I said that the Toronto Maple Leafs have to do their business in reverse order. They have to make sure, instead of this core four, you know, signing Marner and Tavares, they're going to have to make sure they get Knies done first, because otherwise they might not have enough money left properly to get what they need to do with Knies. And so on a bridge deal, I was like 7.5 on a long-term deal, because they'd be eating some free agency years. I was like, well, it's probably going to go to 8.5, somewhere around there. And then I said, because somebody's going to give them an offer sheet at $9 million if they don't have the money. It's just going to happen. That's especially with the cap going up. So the reason I position it that way is I've been getting, like, everybody's throwing rocks at my house in Ontario thinking I'm absolutely the craziest person on earth. But come on.
No. We've been talking Knies. We've been talking Knies and Samuskevich as offer sheet potentials on this program, Books. You'll be happy to know. We're on Team Books, as always.
30, like a guy that's going to score 30 goals and have over 200 hits. There's only two other guys in the league that do that, and he's 22 years old.
Yeah.
My God. Like, look, what's his face? Kotkaniemi got a 6.1 offer from Carolina back in the day. Anyways, I digress. That brings me to Suter. And, you know, I don't see how that's not an impossibility for me, that number. And I'm shocked that I'm saying that. I have to be perfectly clear, because I scouted Suter when he played for the Guelph Storm before he went back overseas and his career really started to take off. But what he is in the middle of the lineup is he provides that speed and that backup, the B plan, if you will. Let's see how the rest of the season goes here. But I understand, you know, the trajectory you're talking about here, especially because if a guy like this can assist in willing the team towards where they want to be, it's not just going to come down to statistics. It's going to come down to team building value. And if the value's there, you're going to overpay a little bit. And I don't even know if it's going to be an overpayment, guys. It might just be what the budget entails going forward.
Yeah, and that's the most interesting question for me about the Pugh Suter dilemma, Books, is where does he slot ideally on your team, right? And, you know, because that changes how much you want to pay the player. So it's great that he's so versatile, and that's a huge asset, don't get me wrong. It's awesome. But you also want to have a spot in mind where you think, okay, this is the ideal spot for him. This is where we think he can really be the biggest difference maker for us. Where do you see that spot in the lineup? You know, third line center, on the wing in the top six. Where do you see that spot for Pugh Suter on a team that wants to be a contender?
On a contending team, I think he's a solid three for me. He's a spot duty top six based on injury, illness, etc. But he's a solid three who matches up against middle six opponents, plays the game. You know what he can do. So, you know, that's the ideal position for me. And, you know, when you start taking a look at if that's what you want to be, a contending outfit, then everybody wants to be that. And let's not forget the Canucks. You know, this year has been an anomaly. A lot of things have gone wrong, but, you know, it's on balance. They're hanging around because they're still a pretty good team. That's where I see him. I see him in the three. Now, let me just bring, I'm going through some of my game reports as I'm spitballing here. So if you look at his statistics, so he's got 36 points, he's got 21 tucks. What did Jake Evans get in Montreal, fellas? Do you remember what the number
less than
ended
three,
up being?
Less than three. Two eight five per.
Okay, Suter's 28, Evans is 29. I suggest to you that Suter has more sustainability offensively than Jake Evans does, in my opinion, okay?
Yep.
So if you look at it that way, therein lies the value, doesn't it? Because Evans is a three-tracking four, where he doesn't have the top six trajectory, in my estimation. I love the player. I love what but he's not that guy.
Yeah.
So that's where I look at Suter, and I'm on board with that. That's a discussion. Now, am I more comfortable if it lands at 3-5 because he's 28, and depending on if he gets an extra year in there? Yeah, probably. But the strategy out of the box, you guys aren't, you're not talking nonsense. I'll say that.
If you're the Canucks, the way you sort of, no matter how you break it down, we're sort of looking at 14-7 in cap space for the Canucks this season. On your Canucks shopping list, would you prioritize top line winger or second line center?
Holy. And we're making the assumption that the top of our lineup plays better. So I'm always going to prioritize a center. I like, because I feel like you can move a really good center to the wing if you have to. So I guess I would prioritize the middle, understanding that there is a hole. Both is my long answer.
yes.
I mean,
wow, greedy. You're getting greedy there, Boots.
Yeah, exactly. But probably in the middle. To balance out how it looks down the middle. You know, you get Hronek and Hughes, Pettersson in the back. Hopefully the goaltending is going to settle itself down. Then you gotta get more stability down the middle. So probably a center, guys.
And so Tom Volander and the Boston University Terriers are going to play on Thursday at 2 p.m., single game elimination, after which his season could be over, and the Canucks could be free to sign him to an entry level deal, perhaps one that starts next year with him accepting a PTO to go to the American League, or perhaps we'll see him in the NHL sooner than later. Do you have any thoughts on what is best for a sort of collegiate player and their development? Like, this Abbotsford team is going to be a playoff team. Would he be better served going down and playing 25 minutes and playing AHL playoff games, or would he be better served getting his feet wet in the NHL and practicing with NHL players over the balance of the season, even if he's not an every game guy?
No, high leverage in the American League would definitely be better. His agent isn't going to like that I'm saying that. But we've been through this. Remember, Jancer, when we had Gerard Gallant with us in Florida, and we wanted to bring out some of our college players, and we were right in the mix of, the thick of being a playoff team. Even with Bobby Bugner, after, right around that time when we had those coaches there, they were reluctant to introduce some of them to the lineup given the state of the team or the trajectory of the NHL team at that time, whether we were playing really good or not. But we were on the cusp of being a playoff team. That's a hard pill to swallow for the coach, because he doesn't know, he doesn't trust that player yet. He's got to come in and earn it. And then, of course, the other situation is, depending on who's been carrying the mail on the back end, have they earned enough runway that you don't want to, have them sitting in the press box? So it's always better to go to the American League, play the high leverage. He's going to get that, in Abbotsford. That's my preference, but you know what they're going to want to do. They're going to want to burn a year off the deal and get a little bit closer to free agency. That's just the way it works.
You mentioned Lekkomäki, the stick twirl before the shootout winner against New Jersey. He scores in that game as well. And there's been a bit of a debate here in Vancouver about his deployment so far in the NHL, and especially this most recent call-up for him. Didn't play a ton in that New Jersey game, although he does end up getting a big regulation goal and then the shootout winner, as I said. What have you thought about how Rick Tocchet has used him so far? What should that plan look like for the remainder of the season for Lekkomäki?
Spot duty to do whatever it takes to get a result. I'm okay with it. I honestly am. Jonathan Lekkomäki is 20 years old, and he's still learning how to perform at the hardest time of year in the National Hockey League in a must-win type of scenario. So I'm not the guy that's going to pile on anything that's gone on with the coaching staff in Vancouver this year. On ballots, I believe that they've done as well as they can possibly do, given all the curveballs they've been throwing. And however he decides to deploy the roster right now to get a result, I'm not even the least bit worried in the last 12 games of a National Hockey League season when you're chasing a playoff spot. I'm not the least bit worried about how anybody's deployed as long as there's a result. It's pro hockey, suck it up, cupcake, and he did. And he could have taken his mindset right out of the game and not been able to do what he did at the end of that game. Like, how important is it that he got off the bench and did that? That speaks to the Karamaki's skill set and his character as well. So I'm okay with it. It's a process. There might be some nights here that he catches lightning in the bottle on the half wall in the power play and he starts ripping the pill in the back of the net and he gets more. I think the coach is just going to give anybody on that roster whatever they deserve right now.
Books, a lot of talk about Rick Tocchet, where he ranks among the best NHL head coaches, what his future could be in Vancouver. How do you assess, not the job he's done this year, and not the job he's done last year, balance of his work? How many teams, when you think about teams that you watch and are maybe frustrated by some of the coaching that you're seeing on occasion, how many teams would he be an upgrade for around the league?
Oh, gosh. Like, if I'm the boss of Bruins, I'm salivating at the opportunity to maybe get Rick Tocchet. I think he's a glue guy for an organization that is on balance lived by how they have a culture there. And I think that he's a culture guy. I think he's done a, you kind of position it there, never mind the last 2 years, but I do have to give him credit that we were chasing, the three of us were talking about it, the culture, we were chasing culture, weren't we, in Vancouver? Like, mm-hmm. Going through coaches, going through a bunch of things. And I think that was established, not just by him, but by his coaching staff. I think there's a real synergy there. I think that this group likes playing for the coach. I think he's evolved. You know, this is a hard-nosed player that and a champion who played the game a certain way. And I'm sure when he first came into the league, he still can be a hard-nosed coach, and I'm good with that, by the way. But I think he's evolved as well. So I think he's got immense value somewhere else, and I think he knows that too. I do believe that. I think he's comfortable enough in his own skin to recognize that. And be careful what you ask for, fellas, because I know you're not asking for it, but I'm just saying, when you got to start from ground zero all over again, if that happens, that's starting with a massive distraction, I would say, in the off season. And that's just another thing on the list that has to get right before next year.
Books, one of the biggest factors in the Canucks, in their playoff hopes being as slim as they seem right now, it's not just their play, but it's what St. Louis has been able to do now with 7 wins in a row. And really, you go back post Four Nations, they've been just on a really impressive heater. How much are you buying, and could you even see a scenario where the Blues put a scare into Winnipeg if that is the first round matchup? I mean, I know they could still jump Minnesota, but if the Blues make it in, how worried should the others, should their playoff opponent be of them?
Oh, very, very. Pareko's going to come back here. I think it was a 6-week scenario, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that. We'll see how that goes. So that's a nice little upgrade into the lineup at playoff time. That team is playing fast, heavy, hard, structured. I mean, how about, we talk about offer sheets. We started off this discussion with a little bit of offer sheet type of examples. How good is Broberg and Holloway been for St. Louis Blues? Like, Broberg or Holloway, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's got 24 tucks, something like that. And then he's still playing like his hair is on fire, tracking up ice, playing physical, all the rest. So the St. Louis Blues, I'm not saying that they're going to go win the Stanley Cup, but they've done this before where they were, pedestrian until they weren't. And Binnington, his stats don't jump off the page. They really don't. Like, his save percentage over his last segment of games is like 909 or 910. But let me tell you this, he's making those timely saves that the same way he did for Team Canada at the Four Nations. He might let in a couple, but it's the next save. And, they got a good thing. I wouldn't want to play them. I wouldn't want to play them at all. And the Winnipeg Jets right now, like, I'm a homer. I want all of our Canadian teams to be in. I want us all to go on runs. It's great fun for the country. It's great fun for the game. But Winnipeg, I would they've just been okay in a lot of their categories recently, especially on the penalty kills. So, yeah, nobody should be afraid of anybody in playoffs because that's what you work to accomplish, be a playoff team. But I would definitely be game planning with a concerned look on my opponent if it was the St. Louis Blues.
So, Books, it's been a while since we have really dived into draft coverage with you. We're not quite there with the Canucks, but, I mean, I got to admit, I have not really looked at this draft class much at all beyond the first three or four picks. So I see you have a piece up today at Sportsnet looking at your top 64 prospects for this upcoming draft. And, you know, just purely at random, let's say between picks like, I don't know, 13 to 17 in the first round, is there an interesting center that jumps off the page to you in that range in the first round?
So we're getting into that. This draft is going to be very volatile, and that right in that area is going to be let me answer it to you this way. I'll put my scouts hat on for a sec. My directors, if I'm sitting at the front of the table, I might be looking to invest some of my draft capital that I have with the Canucks to move up to hopefully bounce up if that's the territory they're in, because it gets a little dicey. Now, Jake O'Brien, the center from the Brantford Bulldogs, he's a 99 point guy in the OHL in the regular season. He'd be an attractive target. I do believe that this is a name to keep an eye on, though. Brady Martin from the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds is a center that you guys would love to have in your organization. Anybody would. I think I got him higher than most people at 12, so he's going to be right in the mix. Well over a point a game, 24 minutes, all situations. Plays the heaviest 178 pounds I might have ever seen in a draft eligible. Plays like he's 238. All over it all the time. Presses the play up ice. Scores. Goes to the cage. I love this kid. If he ever landed on the Vancouver Canucks lap, Brady Martin, let's circle back on this in June.
Yeah.
I'll be ecstatic for you guys. I love this kid.
All right, there we go. We've got the name to watch now going into draft season. Again, don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We'll see how the rest of the regular season plays out here for the Canucks, but I appreciate that, Books.
You're so polite, Jamie.
That's right. Hey, I don't want to foreclose any possibilities here.
No, I'm not. Don't put words in my mouth.
Ben Kindle in Calgary too. Don't forget about Ben Kindle in Calgary. Now you guys got me going. I'm sitting here thinking my wheels are turning off the top of my head. I hope you guys. I hope you guys have like two large double doubles to read. My draft thing. Like we might be running low on time here, but the one thing I do take pride in, guys, is that I don't want to just put a name on a piece of paper without any type of background on them. And it takes a long time for me and my staff to do this, but I really want to do these kids justice. And whether you agree with me or not, it's fine. But I take a lot of pride in the fact that we built this for hours and hours and hours, and we give the viewers and the insiders a look inside the player. Because the players earn that, and I think you got to be fair to 18-year-old kids. That way, just don't put their name on a piece of paper. Do the work. Get out there and do it.
Appreciate that, Books, and it's great stuff. You can read it right now. Thank another name to watch, Ben Kindle. So we'll do a draft deep dive at some point with you before the draft, but we'll keep talking playoffs and all that for the foreseeable here, and we will chat with you next week. Thanks for doing this, Books.
Amazing, boys. Good talking to you. Have a great day.
Absolutely. See you, that is Jason Bukala joining us on the Power West Hotline, your power generation specialist for 50 years. And by the way, the other name he threw out there at the end, Ben Kindle, playing with Calgary out of Coquitlam. So local product and 99 points in 65 games this year for the Calgary Hitmen playing center for Ben Kindle. So a name to keep track of as a potential mid-round pick there for the Vancouver Canucks. They're going to take a center, right?
Well, I mean, hopefully they don't draft for need, but yeah, I mean.
But I mean, like the Willander year, it was like, oh, they're going to take a defenseman. They're going to take a center.
Yeah, I mean, Kindle's right wing, right? He's a winger?
Books has him listed as a center.
Oh, okay. If he's a center and he's right-handed and he had 99 points at the age of 17 in the Dub.
I like it.
Sign me up.
I don't know
anything else about him, but I'm in.
He's now.
I'll get the work done.
I bet you can guess, for you laid out those facts, but he's not projected to go in the top 10. So what does that tell you?
That he's a winger.
No, that he's 5'10".
No, that he's a winger.
All right.
5'10"'s not like, I guess he'd look.
If he was 6'1", people would have him like 8th overall.
Sure.
Yeah. 5'10 is a short king.
No, 5'10" is not short.
Tough for me to hear personally.
Thomas, 5'10" is a short king, buddy.
What are you talking about? It's above average height. 5'10 in the NHL means you're listed at 6'1". You're like, what does it tell you? I mean, it tells you that he's 5'10". It's like, being 5'10 tells you that he's 5'8". What are we talking about?
He's listed at 5'10".
I'm sorry, buddy.
What?
It's just the fact.
Trance isn't 5'10". Trance is
I'm taller
tall.
Than that. And why would I be upset at all? I love that you're
why
raising
are you
the
upset?
Bar. Because you're wrong. 5'10 is not a short king.
In the
king.
NHL, 5'10 is a short king.
Absolutely not.
In life?
In the NHL, yes, in the NHL.
No way.
And in life.
What are you talking about?
No, in life, I think 5'10 is a fine height.
No, actually, I would say even in the NHL, you probably go get down to 5'9".
In life, 5'10 is not a fine height.
How
that's,
many
that's
guys,
labeled as a short king.
Guys, there's like 10 guys on each team that are above 6 feet.
Yeah, NHL but you've got 5'11 in there in between.
NHL players are not a hugely tall subgroup of human beings. They're extremely wide. You're standing right next to them, but you're also like a foot away because of their quads, quadzillas, but like they're not a hugely tall group. How many Canucks players are over? Other than
yeah, but Canucks players are a bad comparison.
I don't even think the Canucks are like that low on average height though, relative to the league. I'm just saying outside of like Drew O'Connor, Tyler Myers, like there's a few guys obviously,
yeah.
But
Petey, Heedle.
Yeah, Petey's tall.
Nails is 5'9".
Joshua's
tall.
Lekromaki's 5'11".
All the defensemen, pretty much, except
Lekromaki is not 5'11".
That's what he's listed on the Canucks
website.
I know,
but no chance. No
Hughes is 5'11".
No chance.
Quinn's 5'10". Quinn's a short kid.
Oh my God.
5'11 is very different from 5'10", by the way.
No, they're not in the NHL.
That's what I've been telling myself for years.
5'11 is the guys that can't get away with being listed erroneously at 6. 5'10 is the guys who can't get away with being listed erroneously at 5'11".
So I've always
5'8 are the 5'5 guys being listed as short kings.
I've always thought, and maybe you guys disagree with me apparently here, but that on my height, I am neither short nor tall. I am the height where like no one would ever comment one way or another
yes,
about my height.
Pretty much.
It's
agreed.
Just totally unremarkable.
I have absolutely
if
never
if somebody
once,
tried to like categorize my height, you'd be like, I don't know what to say.
I have absolutely never once thought about your height.
Exactly. And you know what? I feel good about that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where you want
to
be.
That's a sweet spot to be. Yeah.
Lots of people texting in that they're going to shut it off, the radio off right now because they're below 5'10". I said in the NHL, okay?
And I still
well,
think you're wrong.
You said it, you amended it to the NHL.
Look.
Height, I shouldn't speak.
Height does not matter, guys. Height does not matter.
There you
height
go.
Does matter.
Wow.
I do. Lena. Crushing hopes and dreams out here. Holy cow. It was like, don't put words in my mouth. Height matters.
Height does not matter relative to how you carry yourself. True or not true?
Fine.
Yes. Thank you. I
all
rest
right.
my case.
All right. Well,
I'm only
we will,
saying this because you got a break.
We will we'll leave on that note. We'll take a break. We'll do the whiteboard in the final segment here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.